Fighting out of Boston, Massachusetts, this is the Knuckle Push-Ups Podcast. I'm the 6'4 menace out of East Dennis, Sean Silver. As always, I'm accompanied by a man known to some as Pillow Fists, Patrick O'Connor.
I thought you were going to go with the Wollaston Beach bad boy, or maybe the West Newton bad boy, but now Pillow Fist is probably a better description. My man, good to see you again.
Nice to see you as we are FaceTiming here and a little inside radio here. We are podcasting, but we have things here. We got kids, to quote Heath Slater.
That's right.
And we're talking to each other from remote locations through the beauty of FaceTime. Talking to you through the Knuckle Push-Up Podcast for a fourth consecutive week. And as you could tell from some of the earlier episodes, we hand out homework assignments. So, P, I want to talk to you. Last week I said, let's have you watch some Blazer games. What are you picking up on the Portland Trail Blazers this season?
Took a little trip up to the Pacific Northwest and got to check out a couple games. I watched their whole slate of games from last week. It was my gut reaction, Sean. Something is missing from the Blazers. Yeah. I think the best way for me to describe it is, remember two seasons ago, the Rockets, like how just pushing the bleeding edge of the three-point revolution. Mike D'Antoni got that offense cooking. Took a little while, but once they clicked, it was just like feast or famine. And when they feasted, it was like all anyone could talk about. That really led to a big hangover for the Rockets the next year. It took them a long time to get back. I think it was it was the opposite of the post-Khloe Kardashian experience for James Harden. When he and Khloe broke up, his game really exploded. We were like, all right, this is the dude. And then the hangover from that was pretty bad. It was like, it was just like, I think there was a 1,000 blog titles with Houston, we have a problem. A trend that has continued, which I'm not really a fan of. But I digress. This is a podcast, not a blog recap. So my point is, I'm seeing a lot of the same stuff in Portland. I think they had an unbelievable season last year. They're really cooking. Dame and CJ took it all the way to the Western Conference Finals, and there's just something missing. Like, I do like a lot of what I saw from Anthony Simons and Nas Little. I think they've got some really good young players there. Like, they can develop through the system, but they're just off, man. Something is just off. You know, like starting off the year 4-7, not good. And like there's just a spark that's not there. Maybe they're like thinking like they've hit that certain level now and they can kind of turn it on throughout the season. But my trip to Portland is not a fun one. Not a fan.
They're gonna need to develop internally just because of how their salary cap is. You know, everything's laid out salary wise for them, and you know, unless they make a big trade, moving potentially a big contract that they already have for another big contract and try and find a better fit. But yeah, it's kind of like if they're not clicking with Damian Lillard playing like an MVP candidate right now,
exactly.
If they can't win basketball games, then there's Portland. We have a problem. There's a thorny situation in the Rose City, Patrick.
I'm going to call them the West Coast fun version of the Brooklyn Nets.
Ooh.
Because
hot take. Because
I like watching I didn't like watching the Blazers, but I like them more than the Nets. And I think there's a lot to be said about the performances Kyrie is putting up and the performances Dame is putting up. Dame is a more likable version of Kyrie, I think.
Yeah.
I like Dame Dollar more than I like Uncle Drew. And I just get the sense they're like mirror images of each other. You know, they're not that different. So watching that Blazers-Nets game was really interesting, watching them duel back and forth. It's just there's just something missing. I think you're onto something with a potential trade could be coming. I don't want to step on a future pod, but they're definitely a team that's one move away from being one move away. And I hopped onto the trade machine. I got a couple ideas cooking.
Okay. Is Travis Outlaw involved in any of
this? No, this is an NBA 2K8, so unfortunately Travis Outlaw is not involved.
An old friend.
Cheat code of that game was Travis Outlaw.
So let me tell you about what I found. I went to San Francisco, which, as you know, is the most expensive city in the United States to exist in.
I know it all too well.
They have a brand new arena there. They were going to bring in, you know, maybe not the team that fans had grown accustomed to seeing, but a team that was a pretty close facsimile to that. You still had Steph Curry. You still had Draymond Green. Klay Thompson was going to be coming back. Welcome D'Angelo Russell. You know, they were going to make those tech guys who shelled out for those suites very, very happy with the kind of basketball that they were playing. No, it has not gone that way. And this is what, you know, I'm not an ideas guy, Patrick. You are the ideas guy of this podcast.
Here I am.
I'm just a guy who I hit the books, I analyze, and I come up with stuff based on data. But I came up with an idea. I came up with a comp for the Golden State Warriors season.
Love it.
So there's this episode during the late run of the original Full House show.
Yep. Have mercy.
And Uncle Jesse, as you just quoted him there, he decides to reopen the Smash Club. And Joey says that he could book REM to play the big grand opening. But instead what shows up is three old ladies named Renee, Edna, and Mildred, or something like that, who also say that they are named REM. Unfortunately, Joey's booking idea does not sit very well with Jesse. That is the Golden State Warriors in San Francisco right now. Now, the plot assessment may be a bit myopic there. The old gals do break into a stirring cover of Whip It by Devo. Ooh. That gets the crowd rocking. That is the kind of night where Eric Paschal, you know, if he gets going, if the kid gets going, scoring the basketball, that's, you know, that's the old ladies playing Whip It by Devo and getting the crowd going. But what a disappointment for the wine and cheese crowd in San Fran showing up to that building and just who is going to save the Smash Club.
I mean, all I could say, Sean, is everybody hurts sometimes.
Yeah, that's, I mean, D'Angelo Russell put up 52 in a loss. I watched him play OKC, which, much like the Blazers, is a 4-7 team. That game was never really close. They just got smushed by the Jazz, by the Lakers. It's not pretty. So some good mid-career Michael Stipe would be the soundtrack for the folks there in the city by the bay.
Not even Journey level. That's unfortunate. We're talking Perry, not Journey.
The lights have gone down.
Oh, bummer. All right, well, I mean, is there any other teams you've been meaning to check out? Maybe we should, let's see how the rest of this pod unfolds and assign some homework at the end. What do you say?
Might have an interesting thing to come out
of this. Yeah, exactly. Okay. Let's bet on ourselves to come up with an interesting topic, a little mystery we want to unravel, and tack that on at the end here.
In that vein, Patrick, new segment. Hoops detectives. Call the hoops detectives.
That's right. Get the boys on the case. Give me the hoop detectives.
So, what do the hoop detectives do, Patrick? What do we bring to the table? I'm playing our brand new theme music in the background.
Nice. Well, not to put too fine a point on it, but you and me, a couple dads, the two charter members of the Dad Collective, out here just trying to solve the mysteries of what's going on, trying to figure out who the thingamajig is on The Masked Singer, trying to crack the code of who exactly the Rottweiler is. I got some good ideas there. And we're going to map that type of detection to the NBA, try to figure out a couple things that are really kind of poking around. Not to step on future pods, but there's a lot of mysteries in this season. Why is everyone getting so hurt? And why is, what's it take to get a fan base going? Which teams are one move away from being contenders? Like, really, and throughout history, when these things have presented themselves, what is the type of team that emerges? These are the type of mysteries that only you and I, two guys in their 30s, with just a hint of free time on their hands, can dedicate themselves to cracking the code on. And that's what we're going to do today. First time the Hoop Detectives got together, the pilot episode within the fourth episode, I'm ready to go. I'm ready to solve the mystery. I'm ready to solve the mystery, Sean, of what does it mean when a champion emerges? How can you tell when a champion is – are they showing signs early? How can you tell when someone's ready to pop?
Well, a lot of this comes from – there's a lot of conceptions that sports fans who are not NBA heads, you know, they're NFL people who occasionally they're called upon for their thought in the NBA, or they're puck heads – who want to share their opinion about the other winter sport. And they say things like, well, you already know who's going to be in the NBA Finals at the beginning of the season. Right. The regular season doesn't really even matter. Mm-hmm. So 10 games into the season, I think it's worth taking an assessment of what we're seeing from the teams currently, and also taking a little bit of historical perspective. And you have gone through reams of data to shed some light on can we say with certainty that a team is real or not real 1/8 through the NBA season like we are right now.
Exactly. I think a lot of other sports, it's just an easy thing to say to kind of seem like you're throwing out hot takes where it's like, well, regular season doesn't matter. Basketball is a playoff sport. Season's too long. All these things. And like, those are easy criticisms that are, I don't know, they're older than my dad. That's just like people, it's an easy thing to say. My dad's not really that old. I don't know why I said that.
I was going to say, why are you coming at your dad like that? Seems like a nice man.
No, Sean's a good guy. It's just an easy criticism. And basketball is one of those sports where every single other sport, you can quote Aaron Rodgers and relax. All right. But basketball is a sport built for Twitter, and Twitter is built to overreact. So that's what we do. That's what we do here. And I think looking at a team 10 games in, it's not necessarily the predictor you think it is. I took a look at the last 20 years of starts. Who was leading, like for the teams that wound up ultimately going to the finals and how those seasons started out. And the results may surprise you. I think the big thing that I'm seeing from this data is that while basketball is an 82-game sport, you can definitely tell who's real and who's not through 10 games, but not who's going to be there in the end. And I think there's a lot that goes into that, because some teams, like, I went all the way back to the year 2000, to the millennium.
In the year 2000.
And, like, you know, so the year 2000, Pacers, Lakers, the Lakers ultimately won. Lakers posted a regular season record of 67-15. For the best record. And that was the first time. So in looking at the data to start, I'm like, oh, whoever's off to a hot start or whoever has the best record at the end of the season, the chances of them being ultimately taking home the Larry O'Brien trophy, pretty high, but not really. I mean, the best record making the finals, only 40% of the time. The best record winning the finals, 35% of the time. That one team difference of the 8 that have gone through to make the finals and lose is the Warriors. But they did it in the 73-win season. There's so many other things that go into, like, that go into factoring. I mean, basketball is a game of, I know football is a game of inches, but so is basketball. I mean, like, by an eighth of an inch. I mean, an eighth of an inch is the difference between an air ball and going in. I mean, it's...
I'm thinking of Kawhi's jumper hanging on the rim against the Sixers last year.
Exactly. And I'm thinking of Mighty Ducks 1. When Gordon Bombay is trying to talk up Josh Jackson. So I think that it's a good predictor to see. And now basketball is such a momentum-based game and such a superstar-driven game that the other things that are going to start playing bigger factors in this stuff is how the chemistry relates to those early season records. It has nothing to do necessarily with if they can maintain a hot start or if they can rebound from a dip, but it's what the chemistry of those guys do. So in a league where now there's all kinds of new duos and trios trying to put it together, that chemistry not getting off to the right start could have serious long-term ramifications down the line. I'm looking at you, Westbrook and Harden in Houston.
Seriously. Now, they've definitely broken out with a good record to start the season, but this is going to be something that presumably ebbs and flows. We've already got data out there that suggests that the Westbrook-Harden pairing isn't all that it seems to be. I singled out some teams from this kind of historical analysis here. I looked at the 2001 76ers, who started the season 10-0. And this is a topic that we'll probably explore in future pods as the season rolls along. They wound up being one move away.
Right.
They were great. They started out 10-0 with Allen Iverson, the superstar guy leading the charge, but it took the move for Dikembe Mutombo to really put them over the top. They wound up losing in the finals, of course, as did the 2016 Warriors, another team that started out 10-0 on the season. You could tell that these were, you know, buzzsaw teams that were going to be there at the end of the campaign. Now, to your points that you just made about chemistry and, the fit with various superstars, there was a Cavs team in 2018 with LeBron James. Isaiah Thomas was there. There were a number of pieces. They started out 4-6 midseason. They cleaned house, wound up going to the finals again. Similar with LeBron's first year in Cleveland. It's a very LeBron thing to orchestrate your trip to the finals. He made those midseason trades, and I remember talking about them back when we podcasted back then, back in the 2014-15 season, when they picked up, J.R. Smith, Timothy Mozgov, just a bunch of rando guys. But again, you know, it was enough to get them to the finals in LeBron's first year in Cleveland. And then the Pistons back in 03-04, 5-5 at the 10-game point. They had some pieces there. They had had some postseason success in previous years with, like, Jerry Stackhouse as their leading scorer. They needed to switch a few things up. They got Rasheed that season after Rasheed bounced around from Portland to Atlanta and then eventually wound up in Detroit. And they fixed their chemistry to become really the only team of the last couple of decades that won a championship without a true superstar on that
team. Yeah, and there were a lot of other guys, too, that kind of got traded on to Detroit that year. Guys like Ben Wallace, Rip Hamilton.
Yeah.
And Chauncey Billups, like these guys. And I think that kind of goes along with the chemistry test piece that's so important. And it's not necessarily like the pieces all fitting together as much as the pieces you're assembling to fit the plan you want to execute. So for every LeBron team, even now in LA, the game plan is always like LeBron at the front and who's flanking and holding up LeBron. Now, he can say as much as he wants, like, this is going to – like, a lot of the theories heading into the season was this is going to be AD's team. It's really LeBron's team, but he's propping up AD. Similar to, like, what the Celtics wanted to do back in 87 with bringing in, like, rest in peace, Len Bias.
Yeah.
Like, that was supposed to extend the Celtics dynasty much farther out. The idea was never to, like, take the ball out of Bird's hands, but a guy to, like, where you have multiple weapons that you can shift night to night. That's what really good teams throughout this entire list that they're able to do. It's not necessarily – it's a version of the secret it's not, the secret of basketball is that it's not about basketball. So it's everyone rolling in the same direction, kind of all believing the same thing, wanting to achieve the same goal. But, you know, the disease of more or the disease of me comes in a lot of times after they have a certain amount of success. And that's what I think the big difference is with these teams. So you look at a team like the Warriors who posted – you know, best records for the season from 2015, 16, and 17. All those guys, that was the beginning of the positionless basketball revolution. But it's those guys at the forefront plugging in different pieces that are all going to do, that are willing to sacrifice individual greatness for team greatness, even though they all still were unbelievable at their positions and as a whole. I mean, that's what really made every single member of those teams to be like, I can't believe they found this guy, or I can't believe they unlocked this guy. And went from Iggy being individually considered like, well, I mean, he's kind of older. He's on the tail end of his career. I don't really know how much he can contribute out in Golden State, to being like really the gas in the engine there to kind of move them forward, because he accepted a lower position on the team or a lesser role to make sure everyone else got better, you know, and like embracing that type of stuff. Sean Livingston, same thing, like a complete career rehab. Like, and it wasn't necessarily just to prop up Steph Curry. It's just putting aces in their places. And I think that's what you see throughout, like, all the best records here. It doesn't necessarily net you a title, but it does get you pretty far.
So let's start in the Pacific Division with the team with the best record in the Western Conference right now, the L.A. Lakers. Are they for real, Patrick? They got Rajon Rondo coming back into the fold here. Some concerns about, you know, LeBron having to put up triple-doubles all the time, the supporting cast in L.A. AD is doing his thing. They're winning games. But there's some question about, can they hold this up over 82 games and keep everybody healthy and in place clicking for the playoffs? Is that the real team out of the Pacific, or are you going to go somewhere else?
Three quick things. Number one, I hope that I'm not the person coining this phrase, but why are we not calling that team LeBrondo? Right? Like, come on, guys. I'm not all over the Laker blogs. Please tell me I'm not the person to come up with LeBrondo.
Have you done like a Twitter search for LeBrondo to see if it pops up somewhere?
I'm not, baby. That's just right off the dome. So
if not, then we're going to have to tweet something.
Hashtag
out about LeBrondo.
Second thing, I love Rajon Rondo. Like, I don't care what jersey he's wearing. I'm a big Rondo guy. I think he's going to be a coach sooner rather than later. I mean, let's see how the next couple of years go in LA. He might be the next, he may not be, maybe a Lakers coach before it's all said and done. And before LeBron's off the team, just Rondo out there coaching Bronny and Bronny Jr. But no, to answer your question, I don't think they're real. Like, and how we're defining realness, like for the realness index here on the KP podcast, I think if we're defining real as either living up to or exceeding the hype or defying expectation, no, the Lakers are not real. I think you're going to see them get bit by the injury bug time and time again. Load management's going to come in and play. And I just don't think that team is built to last all the way down the line. They're built to support LeBron, and they're built to kind of prop up AD, but I don't think that team is going to have the legs and the stamina to go 82 games. I think they'll make the playoffs, but I don't think they're going to make the finals. The real team out there in the Pacific is the Clippers. And the real test is going to happen tonight. We're recording on Thursday night. This is the return of Paul George. And I think you're really going to see if that team feels real or not. I mean, I think that, like, you know, when you're watching a team play, they're real if you feel like, oh, there's adults in the room. And, like, there's professionals on the floor. And that's just the feeling I get from the Clips. From
Love Lou Williams,
Pat Bev.
Trez.
Yeah, Trez. My dude, Doc Rivers. Like, every piece of that team just feels way more real than the Lakers. Feels like all show. The Clips, I feel like, are all substance.
Switch gears in the Western Conference right now. The Northwest Division, for instance. Team that was my preseason favorite, the Utah Jazz. Maybe not favorite in the West, per se, but a team that I was really keeping an eye on. They're 8-3 at the time we're recording this, and they're trailed by the Denver Nuggets, a team that was really high up in the West last season, seemed to really hit on something with their, you know, Nikola Jokic, Jamal Murray combination, flanked by Paul Millsap and a bunch of other dudes who do a lot of things well. You got the Timberwolves there lurking. Who's the real team in the Northwest for you?
I mean, I do like the Jazz. I do. I think they I think they're real for their division. And I think they're a little more real than Denver, who I think is probably suffering a little bit from a realness hangover from last season. They surprised a lot of people. They defied expectation last season. And we were seeing, like, behind the Joker, like a real revolution in Denver. Like, they showed a lot of potential of being like, ooh, maybe we should be paying attention to this team a little more. The Jazz, though, I think took a big step forward. They made some real professional moves. I think Ricky Rubio was a really good fit for that team. I know the Conley thing hasn't really worked out yet so far, but with a real team, for the same reasons why in Houston, where I'm like, I think they're going to implode, I think the Jazz are going to be on a similar trajectory, but recover much nicer. I think they made smart pickups. I think Quinn Snyder's a real coach. And I think for the Northwest Division, I think the Jazz are the realest team there, for sure.
Yeah, I'd have to agree with you until proven otherwise. I mean, obviously Denver did it last year, but I think Utah's set up the best out of all those teams. Now, I'd like to take a shot at the Rockets, you know, briefly travel to the Southwest Division here. The Rockets, not real to me. You may agree. Sounds like you kind of agree. But, I mean, it's mainly when Russell Westbrook is on the floor without James Harden, they're a completely different team. They're playing at this breakneck pace. When James Harden's on the floor with Westbrook, they're a completely different team with that than that. And when James Harden is on the floor sans Russell Westbrook, they're a completely different team all over again. It's like we know that you can't win in the playoffs playing a fast-breaking style, but I also don't think you can win in the playoffs playing James Harden style. There's a reason that Russell Westbrook never got the Thunder out of the first round and only had 4 wins in 3 playoff series without Kevin Durant. And James Harden, there's a reason why he's had the level of success that he's had in Houston. They went all in for this year with the Westbrook move, and I still don't think that they're going to get anything out of it. I don't really think there's any real teams in the Southwest this year.
I think the thing about the Rockets is that, like, using our own definition of real, yeah, they're real because they're living up to the hype that was put on them at the beginning of the season. But the knock on them and, like, the hype around them was this is a team of combustible elements. You know, so, yeah, that shit's real for they're real combustible. And I don't know how far that's going to take them. You take a guy like Harden, who can make it all the way to the Western Conference Finals, right? You take a guy like Westbrook, who can bully his way into the first round and then lose. And you add those two things together and hoping that maturity and chemistry can take you pretty far and elevate the rest of your team. But when you have guys who are trying to, like, they're going to get bit by the injury bug throughout the season. Eric Gordon's going to miss 6 weeks. It's, yep. I think you're going to see that.
They're thin, yeah, they're too.
And, like, I think you're going to see way more of that, you know, where it's like, yeah, so they're real in the sense that, like, they are who we thought they are. And I think that's all you're going to get out of the Rockets. The team that I'm really excited about in the Southwest, and again, I don't think they're real in the sense that they're real in the sense that they're surprising a lot of people and they're defying expectations put on them. The real team to keep an eye on in Southwest are the Mavs. Like, they're not going to win the title this year, but I do think they're going to make the playoffs. I think that Luka Porzingis combo is real good. Maxi Kleber as well. I think that's a serious, serious team.
Celtics made them look bad.
Celtics sure did. Celtics made a lot of teams look bad so far, though, Sean. I think
so far, and again, and we'll get to that.
And using using the realness index as far as like defying expectation and living up to the hype. Yeah, the boys in blue. I'm a fan. I like the Mavs, but they're also a number one candidate for a realness hangover next season.
Let's head over to the Eastern Conference. I really liked. We talked a little bit about the Central Division. We'll start there. I want to do the Atlantic last because it includes our beloved Celtics.
Yeah.
In the Central, the Bucks sitting at 77-3 at the time of this recording. The Pacers at 7-4, followed up by some real dregs.
Oof.
How do you feel about Milwaukee?
Milwaukee, I think that, like, seeing them play the Celtics, I felt like they were missing something. You know, I really feel like this team is, they're not one move away. They're one move away from being bad, I think. I think they're one move away from being a really good supporting cast around a one-man army that can't really, that can get them to the playoffs but not to the finals. So
yeah.
If they're a team that's definitely the candidate for, like, they got to make a big move, they're one move away on either way from either being trash or being great. And I'm not sure which way it's going to fall. Maybe trash is a little harsh, but that's not a team that's built to go all the way as currently constructed. And I think there's a move for them to make if this is really going to be the year. I think the Giannis, like, uncertainty is drummed up, but also, like, maybe there's something to it. I don't think he's going to leave Milwaukee, but I guess the threat is always there. I guess we'll see how they treat his brother. They just shipped him and Dragon Bender off to their G League affiliate. Who knows how that's going to make Giannis feel? So I just get a lot of Cavs, 2010 Cavs vibes coming out of Milwaukee in the sense that that team, if LeBron went down on that team, they had nothing. And I think if Giannis goes down on that team, there's no way they recover.
So the answer here is to sign old Shaq.
Yeah.
And bring him in.
Find the generational version of the Godfather, Mo Williams, and get him on this team right now.
I will say that, you know, Chris Middleton is better than any supporting cast member that LeBron ever had in his first stint in Cleveland. But Chris Middleton, of course, now hurt.
Right. And so. I don't think he's a Pippin either. Like, so when Jordan left the Bulls.
He's a nice player.
When Jordan left the Bulls in the mid-90s, and that was Scottie's team, they still had an unbelievable season. You know, they still went to the playoffs. They were still a real serious, serious team. And that was a big emergence for Scottie Pippen to step kind of out of the shadow and into a leading role. I don't see that in Chris Middleton at all.
Yeah, that's what makes Scottie Pippen a Hall of Famer. That's what makes, you know, Chris Middleton kind of – he's kind of like a C.J. McCollum type.
Right.
He's like a nice running mate, but, you know, you kind of wonder if you gave him the keys – if he'd be able to do something for you, which we'll get to the Raptors. But, you know, a lot of people are saying, hey, Pascal Siakam, there's a guy you gave the keys, and he definitely showed what he's capable of. Hitting the Southeast real quick, you know, you want to talk about dregs again. There's some bad teams there, one of whom is the Wizards, who we saw in Boston the other night. You know, that's not necessarily all their fault, John Wall being out. But Miami has really come out cooking. to start the season, racking up a record of 8-3.
That's a real team.
Really?
Flat out. I think that's a real, real team. And I think they're just powered by the Jimmy Butler rage engine, and I think that's great. But yeah,
how far can that engine take you, though?
I don't know, man. You're talking to a pretty angry guy, and it's gotten like the rage I harbor has taken me pretty far in my life. So I can only imagine what a professional athlete's rage like Jimmy Butler is capable of. I think it destroyed the Bulls, it destroyed the Timberwolves. Reverberations still being felt in the Great Plains out there. And also Philly, too. I think the Philly experiment just – I think Jimmy Butler's attitude infected the rest of that team. They just don't know what to do with it. And I think now Jimmy is a little older, a little more refined. He's living down in Miami, living that good life. But all the good parts of it are pushing them forward. I think they're a team that also – they might – they're not – I don't think they'd be afraid to make some moves. But I think that's a real team in the East Coast. And, like, for the Eastern Division, which is not that great – like, it doesn't take much for them to defy expectation, and I think you're going to be hearing a lot about the Butler-led Heat for quite some time.
That's a situation where the free agent pickup, like, everybody fell in line behind that guy and was like, okay, we got our guy now. You know, you don't see that all the time. It's usually because there's another alpha that's already existing there. Miami didn't really have that. I mean, they shipped out Hassan Whiteside. Dragic has taken a secondary role and been pretty effective this season. So, yeah, I mean, Miami's been impressive in that regard. On a different note, I still think that you should have sued Pixar for that movie with the – what the heck was it called with the emotions there?
Inside Out?
Yes, the angry character was absolutely modeled after you, and you deserve some royalties.
One thing I do want to throw a couple – let me throw a couple what-ifs at you in regards to Miami.
Yes, sir.
On a scale from 1 to 10, how real is Miami in your eyes right now?
I think they're a 10 in terms of being everything that their fans had hoped and dreamed that they would be this season. But I think when it comes to the playoffs, I think that rage machine can only take you so far.
Right, maybe a second-round exit.
Yeah, so what's that, a 7 or an 8, you know?
So let me ask you this. What if that team somehow traded for a guy like Kevin Love?
That's a more interesting team. I mean, they have some shooting. Everybody could always use more shooting, and Kevin Love brings that as well as the ability, maybe not as a defensive presence on the interior, but a guy who can get it done offensively in multiple ways for you. So yeah, it adds a dimensionality to the Heat that they currently don't have. They have a lot of guys that are good at one thing.
I get a lot of vibes, almost like the 04 Pistons from them. Like, I think that, like, you don't – I think that could be the superstar destroyer team, you know? Like, Jimmy Butler, certainly, I don't think he's a super-duper star, but he's a real solid basketball player, you know? Mm-hmm. And, like, he's the kind of guy where it's like if you put a lot of elements around him without having a superstar, I think that's a team you could cobble together to really kind of destroy the dynamic duo era that we're living in now. I also think that they're a team, like, in future years, they have enough single elements to attract someone who's looking for a change of pace. I mean, not that I think Gordon Hayward would leave the Celtics, but I do think a team like Miami, as currently constructed, is the type of team they could pull a Gordon Hayward type in free agency.
I like how you're attacking this Miami team here, and I would like to see your take rewarded later in the season, just because I think these are well-constructed thoughts that you have about them. I mean, I'm so emotional as an observer of the NBA and as a pundit, too. I mean, it just bleeds in. So my just distaste for the Heat during the LeBron era and my willingness to just ignore them post-LeBron bleeds into my opinion about the team. I was really unable to look at the Butler signing as anything more than just what is this guy doing? He's shunning the model that everybody else is preaching is the right way to go, and he's just taking the money and going down to Miami, you know, going to go somewhere where no mosquitoes at. and that's basically Jimmy Butler's approach to the season. And here that team comes out just absolutely cooking. It baffles me, but you had a really even-headed way of approaching that.
The one other thing I'll throw your way about Miami that kind of throws a little bit of a wrench in my own gears here is that taking a look at their win-loss record thus far, right? So they're currently sitting at 7-3 at time of recording. The teams they beat, they haven't played that many other teams we would consider to be real, right? Okay. Started the season with a win against Memphis. Like, second game of the season, OT win over Milwaukee. So Milwaukee's a real team, sure.
Yeah.
But they're not like, I don't feel the same way about Milwaukee this season as I did last season. It's just not in the air. It's now it's expected. There's nothing really, like, they're doing what we thought they would do, and I think they're saving something for later on in the season. I also think, like, they're one move away from being a super-duper threat. But they're not there right now, as previously discussed. Next win, they lose to Minnesota, which kind of, like, throws a little bit of, like, water on the fire there to cool off the heat. But then they come back-to-back. So then, then two wins in a row over Atlanta. Okay, not surprised there. Not really doing much for you there. You're fighting a bunch of bumps down there in Atlanta. Not bumps. Sorry. Sorry, boys. But then a win over the Rockets, another real team that, like, as previously discussed, they've got – But
what are you saying they don't have any quality wins here?
I mean, they got – so right now I'm looking at two serious quality wins, right? A loss to Denver, a win over Phoenix, a loss to the Lakers, and a win over Detroit. So
Phoenix, a team that you – I believe you rubber stamped last week.
They're fun. They're fun. They're real fun. You know?
But they're not real.
I mean, I think – so Miami, they're winning the tail of the tape. They've got a couple really good wins in there, sure. But nothing where I'm like consistently they're doing the right things to win every single game they're playing. I don't think they're executing at full level yet. So, yes, they're showing signs of being a real threat in the East and really to surprise a lot of people. Like, this is a Pat Riley special. But, I mean, grain of salt. And they're, it's not like they beat, you know, it's not like they beat the top teams predicted in the NBA straight out through 11 games or through 10 games, rather.
Unlike the Southeast Division, the Atlantic Division is crowded right at the top right now. Three teams jockeying for the title of most real to wear that crown. I don't think that we're necessarily limited to selecting one of those teams. Out of the Celtics, Raptors, and the Sixers, which ones do you stand out?
Real, real, not real. Celtics.
Sixers, not real?
Sixers, not real.
Whoa!
Blazing hot take. Well, here's the reason why. That team is, I don't think the chemistry is right there at all.
Okay.
I really don't. I think they're a talented team. They're loaded. But I don't think this experiment's going to work. I don't think this is the process that they drew up. There's something missing. They might be, and they might just be saving it for down the stretch as well. Just get into the playoffs and then kick it off. Maybe that's the plan. I don't know. But something there just doesn't, at the eye test, it doesn't really do it for me. And granted, like, I'm a Celtics fan. I'm not supposed to like anything the Sixers do. But there's just something about it that just, they're not showing it to me. I'm not seeing it. I'm not seeing about it. And the Celtics, though, on the other hand, my expectations for, though, even though I'm a season ticket holder and a lifelong fan, and I bleed green, as you know, Sean, but they have really, really sitting at a record of 9-1. They got four guys on that team that can put up 25 any night, 3.5, I guess we'll say, if Hayward comes back and he can resume form. That poor kid just bit by the injury bug, worse than I've ever seen, but... The Jaylen Brown, his emergence has been pretty surprising in the best way possible. Jason Tatum, again, I think without the ball stopping in Terry Rozier, Marcus Morris, or Kyrie Irving's hands, is having a pretty decent season, other than going 1-for-18 earlier this week. And Kemba Walker's a revelation. I think they're a team that's clicking on execution and chemistry every single time they hit the floor. That's a real team.
I was listening to Tom Westerholm of Mass Live. He was on the Adam Jones Show on 98.5. I was picking up some Chinese food on a Thursday night.
And now you're talking.
Had it on there. And, you know, Tom kind of said, paraphrasing, they're kind of like the best version of what you'd hoped that they'd be.
Yeah.
To this point. You know, Kemba Walker came in. That's the superstar. That's the guy who can get you the big buckets. Jason Tatum. I love the fact, I mean, it's not always pretty. It's not, he doesn't always execute, but just the fact is he's looking to get his every night. Mm-hmm. and that's a role that he should be in. Gordon Hayward, you know, can't say enough about what he did before he got the injury. And Jaylen Brown, in Hayward's stead, certainly picking up more minutes, picking up more opportunities. It will be interesting to see that balancing act in the future. I do think they're real in the sense that they're cashing in on, again, everything that, you know, we had really hoped out of this team so far. I mean, this is the next generation of that Celtics rebuild that we were really hoping and praying would happen after the Kyrie Irving part didn't really go according to plan. But I still think that there's going to be issues, depth, size-wise. Enes Kanter's contribution to this team remains to be seen, so I can't judge him necessarily so far. But it just lingers in the back of my head that Philly did beat the absolute bag out of them on opening night. And chemistry or not, if the Celtics play Philly in the playoffs, I just think that's still a tough match.
I think you're looking at kind of like it's the tale of two cities, right? It's the best of times and the worst of times in the NBA all the time. And I think that you look at a team like Boston, and what I really like about this team that you didn't see on opening night, which I've seen in subsequent nights, is they're a team built around the idea of next man up, right? So Jaylen Brown gets the extension. Most guys, when they get paid, they almost – no one's like taking the approach of, I'm going to go out and show you why you paid me that money. It just doesn't normally happen. Jaylen Brown, I think, is playing up to the contract, like surprisingly so. Not that I'm
– And you know what? Not only is that happening from Brown, but that happened last year from Smart and is continuing to
happen. And that's the mentality on the team. Right, that goes back to, like, I think that starts with the KG DNA, honestly. And even though no one is left from those teams, I think that feeling lingers in the locker room.
That's kind of like the new meaning of what it is to be a Celtic. It's not the Celtic pride stuff that was preached so much in our childhoods that those teams could never really attain. This is how KG and Paul did it while they were here. This is Rajon Rondo playing with a dislocated shoulder. This is the new meaning of what it is to be a Celtic.
This is Kendrick Perkins coming back from a knee injury and saying, of course I'm back, I'm a Celtic. And, like, that's it just means a lot. And, like, I'm sure every single fan base feels that way, but, like, we've got, I don't know, 70-plus years of that being the case in this city. And I think guys like Tatum and Brown and Smart, I know Smart does, and I think that infects the locker room where it's like they take this really seriously. And I think that when someone goes down, everyone else spreads out. And, like, that responsibility, it doesn't just go into a sinkhole like it has in past seasons where, you know, you have a team with Kyrie where if they're down by 20 in the third quarter, that's a loss, man. Like, maybe they battle back. Like, the Celtics all last season, they'd get down big, they'd make a big run at the end and still lose. I don't feel that way about this team, and I think that's what makes them so real, is that Hayward or not, the team is going to rise, and we got it for you until you're back, Gordon. And I don't think every team is like that. That's the difference between the Celtics and Philly. I think Philly is a little more like the Celtics were last season, where it's like, it's not going to happen tonight, guys. You know, and like they kind of like not take games off, but like the foot comes off the pedal. I don't see that in Boston. And sure, like Philly might like take Boston in a series in the playoffs, but they're not going to win the next round, whatever it is. I mean, the Celtics are going to take the life right out of them. And that's kind of how I'm thinking of realness, right? Where it's like, if you want this win, you're going to have to take it from me. And I can't say that about every team.
Realness is a bunch of players that are buying into a system, buying into a tradition, and we don't have that carpetbagger Kyrie Irving around here anymore trying to sell us on his movie.
Enjoy, Nets fans.
Oh, man. So we can definitely break into that in our next segment, which, again, Patrick O'Connor, the ideas guy. Hot takes or take the bus. Patrick, explain what we're doing
here. So there I was. I'm hanging out with my Uncle Trot. Trot, I walk into the house, and he's just, every time he sees something on TV he doesn't agree with, he starts muttering under his breath, take a bus. I can take a bus. For whatever it is. He starts saying it all the time. He goes down to the Patriots Super Bowl, second loss against the Giants, RIP. And He gets on local TV down there. He's just standing in a bar, and everyone around there is just screaming, "Take a bus." So ever since then, I just love it. Where it's essentially like, get the fuck out of here. But take a bus. It seems so much more the vibe that we're going here on a podcast fighting out of Boston, Mass. So what I want to do, Sean, I want to get a couple kind of a hot take read from you on a couple hot takes that I found floating around the old inner tubes here. So I want your response on this. I'm going to give you a quick setup, and I'm going to give you the hot take, and you tell me if that's a hot take, like one you subscribe to, or if not. It's like, you know, so if I say it and your gut says, fucking take a bus, then you say take a bus. You with me?
I'm with you. All right.
Pascal Siakam, having one hell of a year in Toronto, possibly going for a repeat of most improved player. A lot of people out there might be thinking like that the Raptors are actually better off behind Siakam and without Kawhi Leonard. Your thoughts?
Hot take.
Ooh, not what I thought you'd say.
I don't think that necessarily the Raptors, you know, are going to win another NBA championship with Siakam at the helm, but I do think he is the right guy to inherit that mantle. And the alternative to that would be, well, maybe you're ceding, you know, the reins to a Kyle Lowry type. And I think he's just way too emotional of a player, which can be a very beneficial thing. I mean, think KG. But Kyle Lowry's, you know, just his response to certain situations sometimes, I don't think that he should necessarily be the leaders of the Raptors. It should be this ultra-talented guy who I called the baby deer, because he was just all arms and legs. And I mean, he'd only been playing basketball since LMFAO was a popular recording group. I just didn't think that a guy who had, you know, had such a lack of experience coming out of Africa into the United States could just go to dominate the NBA. But he has put in the work, and gosh darn it, he's going to find a way to bring Toronto, keep them relevant for the next half decade here. So credit to him. I was wrong on
that. Not to be confused with the baby giraffe, Kelly Olynyk. Just one of the elements making the Heat real down in Miami.
Gotta love
next
it.
Take. Load management is actually good for basketball.
I would say take a bus. And that would be a perfect, you know, Uncle Trot response to this new plague that is coming over the NBA. I get it. You know, careers are longer than they used to be. LeBron is playing way longer than Larry Bird, and that's not, you know, Larry Bird obviously had a very specific spate of injuries that limit his career. But you could take anyone from Bird's era and look at the guys from more recent eras who are playing until 36, 37, 38 years old and just say, hey, things are a lot different now. But Jim Murray and I were talking this weekend on the 98.5 Celtics show, the oft-repeated refrain that the NBA regular season is too long. But you sit the stars 10 to 15 times to have them fresh for the spring. I mean, that just tells fans that these games don't matter. This just goes along with the stuff that, you know, people say about the NBA. You know, every critic of the league says, I'll just watch the last 2 minutes of this game. That's the only part of the game that matters. So now you're telling me that not only do the other 46 not matter, but the game itself does not matter because these guys just, they're not even playing them because it's some sort of strategic thing they're doing.
This segment sponsored by Frank's Red Hot, like, because you're getting pretty spicy on this one, Sean. I could see, like, you just turned a brighter shade of pale over there, just going nuts. I think, well, here's the thing. Side take, Sean, side take. Load management is good for basketball in the sense of what it takes to run an NBA franchise, and that's money. So instead of shortening an NBA season, they swap in load management so you don't have to go through the whole thing of trying to condense the season down, because that's going to lower overall revenue for the league. That's going to get guys to make less money. It's going to fuck up the cap. So load management is good for basketball in the sense that basketball continues as is. Next take, Trae Young, the next Steph Curry.
Take a bus. Steph Curry, generational talent, changed the NBA. Trae Young's not creating like a sea change on top of what already happened, but he'll kind of keep it going. I mean, you know, like Allen Iverson was just a different version of Isaiah Thomas like 10 years later, and you know, he added in the hip-hop stuff. I mean, this is a league that's skewed to guard play. You see this all the time where someone's not necessarily a carbon copy, but someone who just kind of furthers the legacy of a player. So that's maybe what Trae Young is doing. No, he's not better than Steph Curry.
Shout out to Jules. Okay, final one, my man. The Nets' problems are not Kyrie's fault.
Ugh, take a bus. Of course it's Kyrie's fault. The thing that made the Nets fun last year was their ball movement and the fact that you didn't know who would be the hero on a night, on a specific night. Is it going to be Dinwiddie? Is it going to be LeVert once he came back from injury? Is it going to be D'Angelo Russell? Is Jared Allen's afro going to deflect a shot that is going towards the basket at a key moment? Kyrie has to be the hero every night. That was evidenced in a game against the Jazz the other night where he ran like 7 straight ISOs in the fourth quarter until it was clear that the Nets were just dead. Those league pass favorites of last year, I get it. They don't win titles. Those teams don't win titles. That was the Bridge Celtics. Remember the Bridgies? Oh, yeah. They were fun to watch, but they weren't going to win titles. That's what they did a few years ago. They brought in Kyrie to legitimize themselves. That is the same route that the Nets are going down. And guess what? You don't get to have fun anymore. And unfortunately for the Nets, they don't get any wins.
Enjoy, Nets fans. So that brings me to wrap this guy up here. What's on tap for the Celtics this week? Let's take a look at the tail of the tape, see where we're going to be next week on Knuckle Pushups 5.
Yeah, Celtics, my advice to you would be careful. You're hitting the West Coast. That was a tough trip for them early last season. That was a big part of the reason that they started out like 10-10, I think, at the 20-game point. They were a 500 team. They had a rough ride. I think they were 1-4 out West. So, you know, you get the Warriors and the Kings. They're missing key players. Those should be wins for them. The Suns, you know, again, they're fun. That could be a win for them. And you finish it out with the Clippers and Denver, two certainly tougher teams. Think about the Celtics. When they go streaking under Brad Stevens, they often follow it up with, you know, maybe not a losing streak, but a period of kind of ho-hum play. Yeah. And you expect regression to the mean. But I kind of looked at the data, and this is going to be in my Celtics notebook on 98.5thesportshub.com. It's not terrible, but it's like every time a Stevens team goes in a win streak of 5 or more games, they're bound to go like 2-3 or 1-4, you know, over the next 5 games after that. And it's just I don't know, maybe some of it's, again, just the NBA and there's ebbs and flows. But be careful here. You know, you can get all happy about this streak, but you really need to take control of the Eastern Conference at this point in the season with all these other injuries that are floating around. If the Celtics can really put their stamp on this season and say, hey, this is our conference. We are going to the finals. We didn't last year. This is the year that we're doing it. It's executing on road trips like this and taking care of
100%. I think the hallmark of the Celtics have been for the past couple seasons playing down to the level of their opponent. That's why you had some losses in Orlando. That's why you had losses to teams like Atlanta that were just the dregs. But this team's a little different. I think they're playing their style of basketball. They're executing their plan more so than I've seen in the last couple seasons total. I can't remember the last time I saw them do this. So something tells me I think it's going to be a rough trip. I mean, the West Coast swing is always tough, but I think they come out of this 3-1. I don't know who that one is going to be, but I got a good feeling. I think we're going to see the Celtics team continue to define their own identity and kind of play up to their level, not down to someone else's.
Well, you know what? That would be great. And until next time, you hear this dog rhyme, try to keep your mind on knuckle push-ups and crime. I'm Sean Silver, joined by Patrick O'Connor. We are the Knuckle Push-Ups Podcast. Thanks for joining me this week. I had a fun time chopping it up with you. And we'll be right back in your earbuds.
Take a bus. Time.